And now it's time for the Wildside News with your host, Sydney Wildsmith.
Scripps Institution of Oceanography. All of our lives we have heard of their adventures in oceanographic research. After 100 years, Scripps now looks ahead to the next 100 years. But what about our oceans? Will they continue to support us? When we return, we get Scripps' State of the Oceans report on this special edition of the Wildside News.
Welcome back to the Wildside News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
Welcome all my wonderful friends and the many new listeners to this special State of the Oceans report here on the Wildside News. We hear each day about oceans, the spate of hurricanes that hammered Florida and the coasts were born of the ocean. We celebrate the grand creatures, the whales and dolphins and shark, and we wonder at the glorious deep sea creatures, the most exotic on Earth. We stand at the shorelines in awe, covering four-fifths of the world's surface. They are the largest living system within many light years of time and space. Few ever really get to see the wonders up close, but for those who do, they have some jarring news. Yes, the oceans are in trouble. They are in deep trouble. Today we team up with one of the world's most prestigious organizations, the Scripps Institution of Oceanography, to give you this special State of the Oceans report. In segment one, we hear from Kevin Hardy, whose depth of understanding will paint a picture of the wonders of the oceans and of Scripps. In segment two, we hear from director Dr. Charles Kennell, who, as a member of the prestigious Pew Oceans Commission, will tell you where we are and where we need to go to find a way to hopefully restore balance to the oceans upon which we all rely for survival. And in segment three, we make a direct appeal to help preserve the priceless Scripps collection gathered and cataloged over the last 100 years, which now faces the unimaginable fate of being dismantled as budget cuts chip away at the foundations of this irreplaceable scientific resource. So now, the Wildside News is pleased to provide our special State of the Oceans report in the hopes that it will make a difference. Thanks for listening to the Wildside News. We're talking with Kevin Hardy, who works at the behest of the director's office and really is working on the Heritage Committee and really trying to help people learn more about Scripps, one of the most amazing institutions on the planet. I know in my life as I was growing up, when the name Scripps Institution of Oceanography is mentioned, people begin to dream about what a miraculous place it is. What is it about Scripps that you think brings that about?
It is kind of a mystical place. I've been all around the world from Norway to New Zealand and through the Straits of Gibraltar and many other places in the world. And everywhere I go, they know the name of the Scripps Institution of Oceanography and they know its reputation. It's, I think, a well-earned reputation.
Actually, you just celebrated your 100th anniversary, so that takes you back to what, 1903?
September 26, 1903 is when we were founded as a year-round biological institution, the San Diego Marine Biological Association. And out of that, we became Scripps Institution of Oceanography.
Its mission right now is based on three areas: research, education, and serving the public. Let's talk about that a little bit.
The institution originally began with a charter to study the coastal waters off the coast of Southern California. And our charter really took us from the surface of the ocean down to the seafloor. And today we really explore from the core of the Earth to the outer atmospheres. And some of our researchers here really look beyond that and are looking at other planets and possible oceans on moons of Jupiter. And yeah, it's really exciting, Earth science and planetary science that goes on here as well. It's just an amazing place to be around.
You have been collecting for that entire time. And that's a huge part of the story of Scripps, because you have one of the world's most amazing collections.
We have two approaches to science. One is to do sampling, and the other is data collection. So we'll go offshore with instruments, we'll take measurements, and we'll come back with a set of data. The other one is sampling, where we go off and we'll collect actual pieces of the ocean, water samples, bottom sediments, and marine life. Since we began as a Marine Biological Association, we began collecting living creatures, and then putting them in formaldehyde or other means of fixing them. And we've been doing that for 100 years. In addition to that, though, our earliest researchers, like Ritter, would bring in collections that he had been collecting since the late 1800s. And in fact, he had some that were handed to him by his professors. So our collections actually represent a global collection of animals collected over the last perhaps 150 years. An amazing, amazing, irreplaceable international treasure that I think is unique in the world. So I get pretty excited about that, because you see an animal that lived 150 years ago, and it's not only the animal itself and what it can tell you in its DNA, but it can also, by its tissue samples, tell you about the oceans that it lived in. You can look at PCBs, you can look at heavy metals, you can look at all sorts of factors that were in existence at that time in those oceans of those days. And so that collection really gives us an opportunity to really fast forward or fast reverse through time to another place and compare today to then. And so that really helps us figure out a lot of time series, which is very important in our observation of science. We have the life forms, the marine invertebrates and vertebrates preserve our collection. And we also have a geological collection as well, which is samples of sediments and cores from our deep sea drilling program that go around the world. Can never be repeated, because you can't go back in time to recollect some of these samples.
You talked about the collections as being similar to the Louvre. I think that's such an appropriate concept.
The collections themselves are, again, a very unique gathering of samples from across not only the world, but across time. And there was a lot of effort by a lot of scientists, a lot of generations of scientists who passionately pursued their science, carefully documented their collections, where and when and how deep and the conditions they were found in, and carefully preserved them and sent them forward to future generations. We've inherited those. We're the custodians of those samples. And they're a treasure to the world, because they show us how the oceans were over time and over space. So we really need to preserve it. And if we let it go, it'll be such a mistake, because you can't replace an animal that was collected 150 years ago.
Is there sort of a cutting-edge arena that Scripps is involved in that you feel are interesting today?
You know, there are so many great people here, and they're working. This place is remarkable for the character of the individuals that are here. And you can come here any time of the day, any day of the year, and you'll find a light on in somebody's office, because they just know that answer is just beyond their fingertips. And if they just stay on it long enough, it's going to be theirs, and they're going to own it. They're going to advance the entire science a step by having discovered that answer. I do see some very interesting things, though, with the microbial work that's being done. Kind of coming back around again to the idea of the importance of biology. And I think all of our work that we've done in the past has almost really become a prologue to our ability to do new discoveries in the area of marine biology.
If you were to compare what's being discovered in the oceans to what's being really discovered and analyzed from the terrestrial perspective, what's the potential for the oceans?
It's a wide open frontier. And I'll give you one example, and it's antibiotics, we mentioned a little while ago. It's antibiotics. And terrestrial sources of antibiotics for ampicillin, penicillin, and others have largely been tapped out. We've pretty much gone all the way, strange places, rainforest, tundra, things of that sort. And the question was asked by Bill Fenicolon and some of his colleagues about, well, I wonder if there's a complement in the sea. What if we can find something, bacteria in the sea that might become a source of new antibiotics? And they went out there, and son of a gun, just with a simple fundamental question, they found something like 2,000 isolates individually that might become the next penicillin. Not all will be great, not all will have, massive power, but some might. And it's actually out of that. I read one story in the ADA, American Dental Association News, front page, and talked about hydrothermal vents. I'm thinking, wow, I know hydrothermal vents are cool, but I'm front page of ADA, why? And it turned out that there was a French researcher who was able to take a barophilic animal, an animal that was a small microbe, actually, that liked high pressure, high temperature, extremophile, we call them. They live in what we consider extreme environments. They're quite happy where they are. And was actually able to extract an enzyme and sugar combination that, when injected into the broken jaw of a patient, the jaw actually healed completely in 2 weeks. I saw the article, I could show it to you. So now they're speculating, well, what about osteoporosis? What about, our football player, the quarterback, who broke his arm? Is it a season-ending injury, or will he be back at the end of the month? So now we have these sort of miracle drugs that almost sound like Star Trek. You know, they wave that little thing over you and goes, and you're better, you know. So now we actually have opportunities, you know, to fix broken bones and attack cancer and actually antibiotics, because we know of certain diseases that are becoming resistant to current antibiotics. So we need to come up with new defenses, and those are out there. And that's that great frontier. It's a whole other planet. It's the other Earth down below the surface. It's totally different down there, and it's exciting to go find the new things that are happening down there.
We were able to just take the water and then make it invisible so that we could actually see all the life that's there without the water. What would we see? What would that look like?
If you made it invisible, I think you'd see some amazing things. There'll be niche environments all through the ocean. There's the midwater, where these animals live, and they're just suspended in the ocean, and they have no need for a vertebrae or a shell of any kind. So they're just this gelatinous jellyfish sort of animals. They live in the greatest volume of the ocean, from about a quarter mile down to a half a mile above the seafloor. And these animals will live their entire life without ever knowing that there's a solid earth. There's anything called dirt, and till they finally die and float down there. There'll be herds of animals like buffalo that used to roam across the western United States that roam across great patches of the ocean. There'll be animals that communicate with each other, over long distances because of the sound channel, which we finally begin to understand. There'll be niche environments such as mud volcanoes at the bottom of deep ocean trenches that each have an environment that animals have specialized their survival to live in. Hydrothermal vents. How do the animals move from one site to another site when there's all this cold, dead water in between? There's answers we're still looking for, and there's some very fundamental questions which, you know, I just know that there's a student out there who's probably 7 years old today that'll be a graduate student in the future that will finally have enough instruments, enough core knowledge to be able to put it all together and find that answer.
Therefore, because of all of this extraordinary diversity, are people sort of thinking about a wilderness system of the ocean? Are we thinking about setting aside reserves?
That's a great question. Thank you for asking it. Here we have an opportunity to consider national parks, national forests offshore. We don't have those right now, and I think we're really suffering because of it. We don't have places for the elk to run and the buffalo to roam. We don't have that, and we're depleting our sources. We don't have places for those great big black sea bass to go live safe and produce tons of progeny that spill out of the forest into the surrounding lands where they're free to be hunted. So, I think a series of offshore connected, perhaps, national parks would be just a great idea. And I think that would really show some tremendous leadership on the part of this country and lead the world in that regard. You know, we are a great people and we have the capacity to do great things. And I think the world expects us to be leaders and show some foresight like that.
There's been some problems. We need to restore some things. We need to rebuild and rethink. How do you see Scripps serving that role in the next 100 years?
It's an amazing place, and I just think down the road, you know, we started off just in the Southern California oceans, and now we're earth sciences and space sciences and medicine, and, you know, I think we're going to start drawing in things like economics, and I think we really owe a responsibility to our nation and to the world to be involved in some of the larger questions, to advise governments, our government, world governments, on where we're going as a species. There are two words that really kind of concern me the most in our history. As we study science, we study the history of our planet. Those two words are mass extinction. There's been five of them in our planet's history, five of them. We're 90% or more of all the living things on Earth have gone away. And out of that last 5 or 10% or less came the next life forms that finally grew up. And humans didn't have anything to do with the dinosaurs becoming extinct. Or the other mass extinctions or the mini ice ages that occurred 10,000 years ago. But right now, there's so many of us now, and we're doing so much stuff. We're burning oil at a rapid rate. You know, the Chinese are coming fast behind us. The Indians are starting to do it, too, the folks in India. And, I'm concerned about mass extinction, certainly, and I hope we don't hit a trigger point that's forced by us, possibly. We need to know how we're affecting the environment, how you can do things like have a sustainable balance in a, in a growth-based economy? That's a fundamental question we have to ask ourselves as a civilization. I have to say that if you have to be marooned on a planet, this is a pretty good one. I think our science really, as it continues to be holistic and gather in physical science, chemical science, we also have to be looking at the social sciences and seeing how we can apply our knowledge of the sea, of our planet, in ways that allow us to live and interact with that planet. So we have to make those choices.
You're very fortunate to have been able to spend much of your life at Scripps here, because it's obvious in the way you see the world that you really do see a huge, wonderful picture that is worth preserving and celebrating. It's been an absolute pleasure talking with you. Kevin Hardy, thanks for being on the Wild Side News.
Thanks, Sydney. Appreciate being here.
That was Kevin Hardy, one of the many extraordinary people who apply their spirit to the future of the planet at Scripps. When we return, we're going to hear from Dr. Charles Kennell. He's the director of Scripps, and he's going to give us his State of the Oceans report. We hear a lot about oceans these days. Mostly we go out and enjoy them, but secretly underneath the surface of those waters, many things are happening. And you know what? It's extremely important that we come to understand what the truth is that underlies these oceans of ours that provide us with food, sustenance, as well as maintaining the balance on this planet. It's our critical need that we address the future of these oceans. And when we return, we're going to hear from Dr. Kennell on this special edition of the Wild Side News.